An Indiana congressman backtracks on government shutdown comments. Did Marlon Stutzman give away the strategy? Why Democrats want Mike Pence tied to the shutdown? Who's affected here in the Indiana response to Obamacare? That plus penalties in a football fight and Indy road race and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 4,
2013. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Indiana Congressman Marlon Stutzman backtracked on some of the comments he made about the government shutdown. "We are not going to be disrespected," Stutzman said of House Republicans. "We have to get something out of this, and I don't know what that even is." A day later, Stutzman said, "I carelessly misrepresented the ongoing budget battle and Speaker Boehner's work on behalf of the American people." Stutzman also delivered this floor speech.
It's clear that President Obama and Harry Reid would rather shut the government down than even discuss the real-world consequences of Obamacare. The American people don't want the government to shut down, and they don't want Washington to saddle them with Obamacare's tax hikes, job losses, and higher premiums.
Did Marlon Stutzman tell the truth the first time? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, why did Democrats pounce on the Stutzman comments?
Oh, for crying out loud, it's a window to his soul. This isn't about principle. This is about politics in the Tea Party echo chamber. That's what this is about. This was a bad week for Republican congressmen, because not only did he say something that showed what he really thought, but so did Todd Rokita. And Todd Rokita is being interviewed by CNN, a very attractive CNN reporter, and instead of answering the tough questions that he is being asked, he looks at her and he tells her that she's beautiful and, you know, kind of says, "Well, okay, don't worry your pretty
beautiful.
Little head."
He said, "You're beautiful and you need to be honest."
Right. But she was asking him
a
tough question.
At which point she cut off the interview.
Right. But she was asking him tough questions he didn't want to answer. And he's up there like he's this big, important congressman. And she ought to be his arm candy. And she ought to be glad that he's deigned to give her an interview. And she certainly shouldn't be asking him questions that he doesn't feel equipped to answer, like the ridiculous comment he made about this insidious piece of legislation. Apparently he doesn't know about apartheid, or he doesn't know about slavery, or anything that was really insidious.
You seem more troubled about Rokita than Stutzman.
Both of them are actually ignorant. I mean, actually ignorant of history and everything else. But I expected more of Rokita, because at least he was a statewide elected official, but obviously I expected in vain.
Back to Stutzman. He said they need to get something out of this. And he said that he didn't know what that was. I think we have an indication now of what that is, because the delegation, the Indiana Republican delegation, has written a letter saying that they would like to see repeal of the medical device tax. Is that what the Republicans are after in this negotiation?
Now,
you know, last week, Republicans sent to the Senate, House Republicans passed a resolution to defund. They passed a resolution to delay for 1 year the individual mandate, just as the president delayed the employer mandate. They also sent a resolution to the Senate to, get rid of the medical device tax. Joe Donnelly, who says he's against the medical device tax,
voted against
that. And
he's not going to succumb to extortion, which is what this is. Plain and simple extortion.
But in a different circumstance, Joe Donnelly has voted to repeal the medical device tax.
Right.
Right.
In a sense where it meant something as opposed to this, which again was a Tea Party echo chamber.
We had an opportunity to protect Indiana jobs, and he failed to do so.
No, you didn't.
Well, what has this done for Marlon Stutzman's reputation?
It didn't help it, certainly. There might be some small elements of the Republican Party who, sort of the Ted Cruz element, who might stand up and say, hey, next time I'm getting a solicitation from this Marlon Stutzman, I'm going to write a check. But I think that's a very small group. It's a bad week for him. The best thing probably he had going for him was the old adage, misery loves company. And there were other members of his caucus who said dumb things too, including one who said, this isn't about Obamacare. It's about National Guard. It's about reservists and funding them.
Republicans are trying to change the subject.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And then you had an open mic today where Rand Paul from the Senate was talking to Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, basically saying, hey, I don't think the White House is poll tested on won't negotiate. So basically he's having this strategy conversation on something that's supposed to not even be about gamesmanship or brinksmanship. It's supposed to be about policy. Clearly it's about something else, at least in Rand Paul's mind.
Who had a worse week, Todd Rokita or Marlon Stutzman? Oh,
wow. They were neck and neck, and there's still a lot of race to go, and they better be careful or they're going to foul out, because neither one of them had a good week, and I'm not even going to say one was better than the other because they both had lousy weeks.
I think the president had the worst week because the president isn't showing any leadership, has refused to discuss anything, and is not providing an opportunity.
But, yeah.
You know, in 95,
bow to extortion by your 35
in 95
members.
President
Sorry.
Clinton brought everyone together when there was a shutdown and talked. And we're not seeing that right now.
And you set the seeds in 95, and it wasn't over this.
It wasn't over a piece of legislation that had been passed and vetted by the Supreme Court.
Right.
I can see why the president wouldn't want to give on that. I think that what we were talking about earlier with the device tax may be the out that allows both sides to get something done and get this going, so the real issue, the debt ceiling that's coming up, can be dealt with.
Can you imagine if people complain about gridlock now, if it becomes the notion that anything that's been passed, enacted, and is in place is subject to negotiation on any piece of bill, Congress will never, ever get anything accomplished.
It's extortion. All right.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, did Marlon Stutzman damage his reputation this week? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, what reputation? Last week's question was, should pregnant women be forced to take a drug test? 23% said yes, 61% said no, 16% said why not test everybody? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Democrats are trying to connect Mike Pence with the government shutdown. It goes back to a speech he made 2 years ago.
We've got to say to Harry Reid and liberals in the Senate, this far and no farther.
The scene is a Capitol Hill Tea Party rally in 2011. It came in the middle of a budget battle in Congress when Mike Pence was a leader in the House GOP. Then a shutdown was averted, unlike the one we're currently witnessing. But the rhetoric sounds familiar.
I say, shut it down. You know, nobody wants the government shut down, but if we don't take a stand, we're going to shut down the future for our children and grandchildren.
It's why a spokesman from the Democratic National Committee says Pence put in motion the events that led to the current shutdown, a sentiment backed up by State Democratic Chairman John Zodi.
It's compelling to think that our governor is the one who continues to advocate for a shutdown, which then has such a drastic effect on the economy here in the state.
Tuesday in South Bend, Pence offered this view of the current shutdown.
I believe that efforts to delay the implementation of Obamacare and also efforts to reduce the negative impact of Obamacare on our economy are worthwhile.
His position appears unchanged since 2011. Although today Mike Pence is backtracking somewhat, he's saying that he never said that the shutdown was worthwhile. Is he worried about political outcomes here?
You know, the president has refused to discuss the situation here at hand, and that is the fact that Obamacare is unpopular, unworkable, and it's unfair to Americans. And Mike Pence recognizes that it's unfair to Hoosiers as well. And certainly the shutdown is unfortunate. But we've got to recognize that we've got a piece of legislation that is not working right now. You know, the system's failed on
Tuesday. It's actually not a piece of legislation.
Yeah,
it's a law.
It's a law.
Well, it's a law.
It's
not working.
You know, what's great about this is the change in the conversation. That didn't answer the question at all. But, you know,
there's been a lot of that this
year. Yeah, no question about it. And the fact that he wishes now that he could eat the word worthwhile, he clearly set the whole thing in motion with this. He was willing to shut it down over the funding of Planned Parenthood back then. And now he's willing to have the government shut down. And he cavalierly says he's going to pay $35,000 to keep the National Guard active duty on. He's not talking about the tens of thousands of state employees who have no income during this. And he doesn't seem to care about that.
Federal
employees, or the WIC people, or the Head Start program, or any number of things.
Why does Mike Pence want to get involved in this?
No, he shouldn't want to get involved in this.
He
did, and so he is. But this is purely an issue that should be playing in Washington and among the congresspeople and the senators from the state of Indiana. I think it is a strategic mistake to be involved in this. And I also want to point out that he wasn't governor then, but I'm sure he was in concert with the Republicans who were practically begging Democrats who had walked out of the state over policy issues to come back and go to the work. Well, isn't the same thing going on here in the sense that nothing is happening because they've allowed this shutdown to occur and they won't negotiate? They want negotiations over a settled law.
Yeah.
I don't think that makes sense.
Meantime, Mike Pence and Republican congressmen are trying to lay this on the president. They're saying the president's the one who doesn't want to negotiate. Does that sell with the public?
Again, a small percentage who thought that going in, who were antagonistic toward the White House, nothing Barack Obama could say or do would satisfy them. These are people who, in many cases, despise the notion of government and probably would vote for a shutdown, you know, 365 days a year. I don't know what they'd want in its place, but maybe anarchy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But clearly, I think Mike Pence, in his defense, did not walk into this week. I mean, it was. These questions came up because of comments he had made in the past. But one thing that he, I think, is responsible for administration.
He's also the guy who had to apologize for private comments where he compared Obamacare to 9/11.
Well, yeah. But there's also the cost assessment on a daily basis that came, I believe, out of his administration, which is $33,000 economic impact on the state of Indiana. That's ludicrous. I mean, how could it... if you're talking about 1,000...
we're going to get to that. We're going to get that in just a second.
If they want to fix this, quote-unquote fix this, then the option to do that is to repeal the law and not to try to do it through what is amounting to extortion in this process. If you don't like the law, then get enough votes to repeal it.
It's not going to happen until 2016.
Well, but that's the proper and settled method for more than 200 years in this country.
Yeah.
But there are 232 House Republicans who were elected in districts across this country.
We haven't had an opportunity to vote on the continuing resolution.
Who's not working this week? It's the Senate that's not
working. Let's also point out that those 230 Republicans elected were not elected with a majority of the vote cast for congressmen. And that's due to gerrymandering. It's not due to public support.
Around 1,000 Indiana National Guard employees were sent home because of the shutdown. Half of the 2,000 National Guard employees were furloughed. They work for the Guard but are considered federal technicians. Catherine Elkins had to come in from maternity leave to sign the furlough paperwork. She admits she's a little stressed out since her husband is in school and she's the family's breadwinner. The shutdown means no family income.
It's frustrating for us, you know, real people, as they put it. But I have faith that they will come to an agreement and do what's best for the American people.
John Katzenberger, what's the net effect of the shutdown in Indiana?
Well, the net effect is much greater. The statistic that John started to talk about is much greater than the $33,000 a day. And it is also much greater for the people who are actually affected, the people who are not getting paychecks and not being able to go to work. It costs the state income tax. It costs the state sales tax. But it also costs those families very personally, and it's very difficult for them. And if this goes on any length of time, I mean, one day for them is too long, but any length of time, it gets very serious in a hurry.
The net impact in Indiana is not as great as it is in some other states, however.
That's true. There are some states clearly that rise and fall based on civilian workforce within the Department of Defense, for instance, that were deemed non-essential, and more military-based services and infrastructure. So it's you're right, it's not as bad. But again, you look at the proverbial ripple effects here, and it does affect the guy on the corner that runs a diner that services employees who work for these kinds of entities, and it goes from there on and on and on.
Are you concerned about the effect on the economy? Could this lead to another recession?
I think House Republicans are presenting an option to retroactively pay federal employees to deal with that situation. Here in the state of Indiana, the governor stepped forward to assist the National Guard employees with payments through the state.
Some only 240, though.
Positive steps to help in this situation.
Should people in Congress be taking their paychecks?
I don't think constitutionally that they can fail to take their paychecks, but I think they ought to donate them to charity. And I think the fact that Todd Rokita got so defensive about that question is offensive, because it shows, again, that they're tone deaf to the real harm that they are inflicting with this political stuff on average people.
All right. Obamacare health insurance exchanges are officially open this week despite the battle in Congress. The idea is for everyone to have health insurance or face fines beginning next year. The online exchanges or marketplaces are where you can go to comparison shop if you don't have insurance to see which plan best fits you or your family and to see what kind of federal help you can get to pay for it.
So, but it is much like you would go out and shop for insurance in the open market, but instead of having one agent come in and sit with you and then another agent come in and sit with you or whatever, it's sort of a gathered and assembled, aggregated in this one website.
Dennis Roseborough there, the Indiana Department of Insurance. John Schwanis, how is this working so far?
Cliche warning is it's too early to tell, and I say that we don't know a lot of the data. We won't know enrollment data for several weeks. In fact, I think till maybe mid-November. Clearly, the system, the online system, was not equipped to handle what I think by most accounts was more interest, even if only out of curiosity, than anyone had expected. If, in fact, that level of traffic is an indication of the hunger people have to secure policies through this, who knows? This actually could work out well, but again, too early to tell.
There does seem to be quite a bit of interest.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note what John's talked about there. A lot of people were surfing in the early days just to see what it was like, and really we'll know in the next couple of weeks what the real numbers might be and when people start actually making those decisions. But I do think that people are missing the notion that there are a lot of people who do not have insurance and that they will find that this is a good alternative for them and a way for them to have insurance and to have mobility that they currently don't have because they may be tied to a job. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what numbers we see coming out of this.
There were glitches, a lot of online delays. Was this a successful rollout?
Oh, I think it was successful, and I hardly think the Republicans can complain about computer glitches when they had one that lost $500 million for a period of time. But I think the important part of this to realize, too, is that we're not going to see the full benefit of it here in Indiana because we're not expanding Medicaid. So those at 27% of poverty up to 100% of poverty get no public support under this system because Mike Pence didn't want to include those 300,000 people in that. And he also didn't want to set up the exchanges. So the amount of alternatives you'll have to shop are going to be limited in Indiana. So they're trying to make it fail, and they're trying not to cover those 300,000 people without insurance that could be covered by Medicaid. And I think it's really morally reprehensible on their part.
Your take on the rollout?
Well, obviously, it could have gone much better. The system was difficult to get onto and log onto. And
like
one of the reasons
test,
people were doing logging on, what people were trying to log on to is because they're getting letters from their insurance providers telling them that their insurance will no longer be available. They have to look at new options. And what they're finding is the new options in many cases is going to be more expensive.
Who gets those letters?
Individuals that have individual insurance today.
How many of those carriers are there out there?
I've talked to several.
80% of the people are covered by employer insurance. You're making that up to be more than it is.
I've talked to several, and what they're seeing is that their rates are going to be more expensive.
All right, moving on. Arsenal Tech played Southside of Fort Wayne in a high school football game this week that ended in an on-field brawl. As a result, a Tech assistant coach was fired. Tech also said four parents involved in the fight are banned from all games for the rest of the year. The Indiana High School Athletic Association has suspended Tech's head coach and the head coach of Southside. They'll be out one game. All of the students involved are also suspended, and both teams are on probation. Bobby Cox of the IHSAA.
What we need to do is figure out why these things occur, as opposed to pointing the fingers and blaming an individual or a group of individuals, and then educate.
Ann Delaney, is that a strong enough response?
That is ridiculous. I mean, I've always wondered why the IHSAA existed in the first place, but that's absurd. You get a bunch of kids out there with testosterone running amok, and you say you have to educate them not to fight, and you have to educate the adults not to fight. They ought to disband that whole organization. What a joke.
What's the moral here? I mean, is this evidence that athletics are given too much importance in our society?
I think what's evident here is that those who are put in charge of the programs, the coaches, the administrators of these schools, the parents of these kids that went out onto the field, are not properly doing their jobs. And one game, let's get serious. That certainly was not enough for the situation.
What would be appropriate?
Well, I think each of the schools should look at what the IHSAA said and take additional actions.
Should there be set guidelines for this sort of event, set penalties?
No, because how can you anticipate that kind of activity? As soon as you start to try to, you know, if you punch to the face, you get two games. If you punch to the torso, you get one, but maybe two if it's your second offense.
Three people involved, or four people.
Yeah. This is an event on the field. That's where it's probably you have this notion also, in addition to the penalties, that both schools have to look at the online sportsmanship course from the association. I think that's all you need to say. Well, if you're going to watch an online course,
that might be
a nice
way,
all the world's
that
problems.
Might be a nice way to start the year for every team.
Yeah, well, it would be. And you know, football is supposedly about sportsmanship and learning to, you know, overcome adversity. And when you see two coaches out there throwing punches at each other, I think right there, those people, and they may be the ones that got suspended, but the people who are responsible for them, they should be suspended. And it would be unfortunate for those teams, but I don't know why they're playing football again this year.
Because it's not about sportsmanship, it's about winning.
Well,
that's
it's
why.
Not even about winning. It's trying to be tougher than the other guy, and I think that's totally...
And the association says that one reason I think that they're being allowed to continue the season is to preserve
the tournament,
the sectionals, the quality of the sectionals, or that's not... quality is not the word.
Do they make money on that?
I think they do. The date is set for a new IndyCar race in the month of May. This week, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway announced a new race on the road course at the Indy 500 that will happen on Saturday, May 10th. That's two weekends before the big race. The race will be called the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. IndyCar driver Graham Ray Hall.
If you're a fan, you know, why not come out and enjoy really two different types of action over the weekend?
I came here 30 years ago and saw 100,000 people on qualifying day and loved it. And I still remember the feel. And then the sheer speed and performance of IndyCars. Every single year I come to see and admire and look at these people on the ragged edge. It's hard for me to go to the other side and say, well, I'll watch a road course now at Indianapolis in the month of May.
Race analyst Derek Daly there, former driver, father of a driver, Tim Berry. Does the road course race go against the tradition of the Indy 500?
Bring on the 30 days of May. I think it's awesome to bring back more excitement to the track, more excitement to the month of May, and I think it's awesome.
Will this do that?
I think it will exactly do that. Bring back the fans to begin the month. Let them enjoy the day and stay throughout the month and cap it off with another fantastic 500.
They're saying that this race will be broadcast live, unlike the 500, but they expect a local and regional audience, not a national or international audience like you get with the 500.
Well, you know, it's new, so, you know, maybe the international and national audience will build, but it's economic development, so it's great.
You know, the 500 has always been about innovation, and I love tradition, but I think that people who get hung up on tradition are missing the opportunity for innovation. I'd love to see the spec cars go away, let people start thinking and being imaginative, finding the speed, and doing what they used to do out there, and that would bring back those big crowds as well.
I would love to see the Motor Speedway do well. Anything to create that, what Tim described as that month of excitement, is great. I just hope it is more exciting than, say, the F1 racing we saw a few years ago when it's single
file.
You want
some passing.
Nice to have one, maybe two passes in a race. A
couple of accidents.
Yeah. No, that's Indiana, as long as nobody gets hurt.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.